So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to Love After Lockup, Haha, Okay. I'm Miss H, and today Mr. O and I will be talking about Season 3, Episode 9, possibly the mid-season finale of Love After Lockup. This week, Dylan gets out of jail and has gained 80 pounds of irresistible muscle. Destiny spends Sean's money like it's going out of style. Chevelle and Quaylen's family all voice their fears and concerns with one another. Maurice finds a father figure in Jessica's dad. Christiana and John get caught. Tyrese talks about the lack of sex with Shonda to his son, and Scott gets berated by Lindsay for giving her a county fair. If you like what you hear, please support us by subscribing and leaving a 5-star rating, or any other constructive comments are welcome. And if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast channel, 90 Day MK, Teachable Moments with Miss H and Mr. O. Thanks, stay safe, and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O.
How are things going? I heard it's hot over there. You got a heat wave.
Yeah, it was like a 2-day heat wave. Like, I'm looking out the window right now, and it's kind of cool. And
yeah, so you just had like two of my regular August days, and you're like, oh my God. No, it was yeah, it was legit. It was legit hot. It was like, it would be hot anywhere. It was in the hundreds in LA.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely was super hot. I live kind of more coastal, so it
sure
wasn't as bad, but yeah, I mean, it was tolerable, but anyways, it did make watching the show a little bit more uncomfortable than usual, just because it's like, oh, it's really hot, and now I have to watch this show.
There's some hot, like,
heat
locales
from the dumpster fire.
Well, there's also heat from the dumpster fire, exactly.
Sure.
So let's start with John and Christiana, actually.
Okay.
So Christiana has just finished her visit with her mother. And is confident that the support she has from John will be what she needs to stay out of prison. They talk about the issues of being together while in the halfway house. She's technically only allowed out when she's applying for work, which she is required to do. But they're skirting the rules a bit by taking a little bit of extra time while she's out to have some time together. John lets us know that he's one of those assholes. They go to a restaurant, and he's one of those assholes that feels uncomfortable when he can't see the door of the restaurant. God, we'll talk about that. It drives me so crazy, those guys.
Okay.
But that's not really the concern here, because as soon as they sit down to order some food, one of the employees from the halfway house comes to their table and tells Christiana that she needs to immediately go back to the facility. Apparently, there had been suspicions about what she was doing while she was out, and they followed her out on this job-seeking trip. On the way out to the car, the PO chews her out and says she's going to be restricted to the building for the time being. Next we see John. He's standing watching the halfway house from across the street, I think, and is nervous that Christiana is in really big trouble. Eventually, he gets a phone call from her, and she says she's getting a ticket and is super stressed. John ends up being worried that the stress involved might drive her to either relapse or bail on the center. And weirdly, he seemed to say that the worst option was she would bail on the center. So what do you think of those two bad choices? Is the worst of the choices leaving the center and going back to jail, or falling off the wagon?
I mean, doesn't it all kind of result in the same thing in the end? I mean, his biggest concern sure is that she's going to go back to jail. So whether or not that means because she broke these little rules and then she ends up going back to the facility, or that she falls off the wagon, and let's be real here, she's going to end up back at the facility. I mean, in jail. So
yeah,
it just, I don't know. It kind of seems like maybe breaking the rules would be better. Like, I feel like they wouldn't come down as harshly as if she were to be a flight risk, run away, they find her using, you know, it just seems like.
Right. I mean, there's a huge chance that the one he didn't say is that she'll flee the center and be using at the same time.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yeah, I just assume that that's what that means, because it seems like she's got a pretty level head on her shoulder. She doesn't want to go back to prison. Mm-hmm. And she knows that. But I mean, she's admitted that she doesn't think about those kinds of things when she's using. So she's running away from the center. It is to use.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, because I guess in his head, I thought he was imagining she would just like show up at his doorstep, just be like, knock, knock, be like, I don't want to be at the center anymore.
I don't think that's a thing. Yeah.
Right. I mean, okay, so let me go back because I don't know if you know these guys. I don't know if guys share this with you. The I'm uncomfortable because I'm not facing the door, but I'll be okay.
No, I don't. I've never heard of that before. What is that?
Oh, there are certainly guys who are like so like confident in, I don't know, their ability to fight or their ability to like navigate situations that they want to be able to see the door in case shit starts going down in this restaurant. Like I have to be able to watch and see who comes in and out so I can keep an eye and like protect myself. And if my back is to the door, like you're in the friggin' mafia and somebody's going to come in and, you know, take you out like from the back of your head.
So I kind of got that that's what he was alluding to. However, I didn't really take it as just the guy who's trying to start a fight. I took it as the guy who's formerly been in prison and just wants to watch his back. That's how I kind of interpreted that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because every guy I've ever known who been that was like, well, I want to be able to defend myself. I got to do it. I'd be able to see the door. I'm like, dude, you haven't been in a fight ever. What are you even talking about?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I just took it a different way. Like, he just didn't want to be a trapped animal. Like, he just didn't want someone to come from behind him and not have a way to get out.
Right. And it's,
and
it's,
I feel
it's
like
a
that's
weird
a prison thing. Yeah.
It's a weird paranoid thing to go through life. And honestly, of the two people that should have been facing the door looking out for trouble, the most likely trouble that was going to happen was somebody from the halfway house was going to come in. And which person would recognize that? Which person would like be the one you wanted to see the halfway house person coming through the door first? And she missed it, right?
Right.
Like, it's almost like in this particular situation, the one who should be on the lookout is the person who knows what they're looking for.
Yeah. So I had issues, and I think you did too, Mr. O, and I want to say it was WeTV, but it like blacked out, you know, like at some weird part. And then I had to go back and watch it on demand. So I actually watched this twice.
Okay.
And what I noticed, because I knew what was going to happen, uh-huh, is I really paid attention to like their whole thing when they're at the restaurant. She could have easily, like if they had rolled back the footage, like easily played it off, like, hey, look, we sat down. I asked her for a application. She just also dropped off menus. And before they even had even a chance to really look at the menus, that's when the PO rolled up. So it was kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, so it seemed to me – actually, it seemed to me like the PO rolled up like as soon as it was – as soon as she like actually looked at the menu, right? Because come on, if you're walking into a restaurant to ask for a job application, you don't get seated.
Sure, sure.
You go to this – you go to the – you go to the, you know, hostess or host and be like, oh, hey, do you have job applications? And you walk back out. You do not sit down and then ask for – you don't sit down with your husband, ask for a job application, and then start perusing the menu. Like
right. But, I mean, you could easily argue lots of things like, okay, well, I wanted to see what kind of food they served, what kind of establishment this is, if I'm going to, like, work here or something like that. I know, like, I've only ever applied to one server position, and they, like, one of the things that they had me do is I went in for an application, and then I was supposed to go in for an interview later. They wanted me to practically memorize a stupid menu. And I was just like, this is too much. Like, you have to remember, like, the description for everything. And I don't – like I said, that's the only restaurant application I've ever, and that was like when I was a teenager. I don't know if it was some kind of filtering process or just everybody does that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I also don't know how close they were because like they were saying like things, right? At least you said you watched it twice, so maybe I missed it. But I can't remember if it was on an interview or not. But John was like, oh, this is nice that this is the first meal we get to share together. Like it was,
oh, goodness.
Like he was like saying things like that out loud when they were like two tables away.
Right.
Because they had followed, it wasn't just like they happened to be in the restaurant. They were following them the whole time. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it seems to me that, okay, so they said that she had to have a quota of 10 a week.
Mm-hmm.
That just seems so little. That's like two a day. Like,
right.
How are you spending the rest of your day? Like, I don't think it takes like 8 hours, let's say, to apply to two jobs. Why can't she just go to lunch?
I mean, I think – and based on – and this is what I started to get – because I don't know how the system works, right?
Right.
From what I started to gather from other people, specifically Tyrese and Shonda, it's kind of like it's because she's been out for a day. You know, if you do this for like 2 weeks, then they'll be like, oh, okay, well, you can have the weekends out. Okay, well, now you can do this. But like, because it's like literally her first day out and she's like, yeah, I'm going to go out to lunch and I'm going to do this and I'm going to go see all the people that I'm going to have this guy drive me around to see all the people that I knew in my old life. And you know, it's her mom and stuff. Right. But they're like, no, we need to like you come in for the first week and we get you all settled in. And then because she just immediately comes in and starts breaking the rules and is like,
Yeah. But I mean, okay, from her perspective, it's like it's not like she doesn't know what the rules are. Right. This is not her first time in this halfway house.
Yeah. And which I think puts her definitely on the wrong side of the halfway house people. They're like, you know what's up.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know,
definitely.
Like, you know how this works. And and we've seen you. We've seen this happen already before. So we already have our eye on you.
Yeah.
So,
she's a flight risk for sure. Yeah. But, you know, and that's the sad part, too, is I feel for her and it makes sense to me why she is a flight risk. You know, like just the way the rules are set up, it doesn't lend itself to kind of meet her needs to feel like safe and secure and supported.
Sure. Yeah. You know?
And that's why she has that need to like run away and like use.
Yeah. I mean, the obviously the addiction adds a whole other layer of it.
Sure.
But what just really bothered me about it was it definitely hit my pressure points as a teacher. Like the kids who are always getting suspended and they're like, the rules are dumb. I don't know why I even got suspended for this. I didn't do anything wrong. And you're like, back it up, right? They're just being corrupt. They just wanted to get me. They're out to. They don't even care about teaching people. They just want to blah 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 blah. And I'm like,
right? No, believe me, I'm triggered because I mean, I don't know if it's because I'm a teacher or because I'm a teacher because of that, but I'm definitely by nature a rule follower.
Definitely,
like the rules are here for a reason. At the same time, I would also say that I'm pretty empathetic for things, and that doesn't mean that I apply rules inconsistently, because that is actually one of my strengths, is consistency and empathy. But it's like, I still feel bad for her that these rules don't work for her, but yes, I agree with you that she still needs to be following the rules. Yeah. All right. So let's go ahead and move on. Let's speak of other people breaking the rules, Maurice and Jessica. So Maurice and Jessica go to meet her parents. They are very welcoming, and Maurice is geeking out over how nice their house is. He says that Jessica looks like a younger version of her mom, Jill. Maurice then tells her parents about how bad it is in LA, living with all the cockroaches, ping, ping, ping. It then comes out that they're still waiting on his parole to be transferred, and they're not actually supposed to be there. Jessica's dad, Dave, puts his foot down and says they need to follow the rules. He doesn't want her to get in trouble for Maurice's sake. Jill and Jessica have a one-on-one where Jill tells Jessica that she likes Maurice and she doesn't feel like he's conning anyone, but she is worried about this parole situation. Dave has a heart-to-heart with Maurice. He tells them that he has worked hard to get where they are and he's worried about Maurice's place in the family. Dave says he doesn't want any of Maurice's old crew to mess with her family or knowing where they live or anything about them. Maurice says that he's never had a father figure. The hood raised him. Maurice says the gang life doesn't excite him anymore and he only wants what's best for his wife, Jessica. Dave says it's what's in him and his heart that matters, and he thinks that there's an opportunity here because he's never had a son. And he wants Maurice to feel like a son, where they can go fishing and work on things around the house. He just wants to see actions. Maurice says that Dave will be the first person he will confide in for manly advice. Dave says that he needs to go back to finish out his parole, and Jessica should stay here where it's safe. He says it's what's best for Jessica, and Maurice should really consider that. All right, so I know they were super worried about Maurice meeting the parents to the point where, you know, that was kind of the cliffhanger from the last episode.
Right.
But do you really think Maurice should have been worried about meeting her parents?
Clearly not. Like, they were both
super pleasant people to
him. Super pleasant people. Like,
super
great to
welcoming.
Him. Like, welcoming.
Like, let's be my son. Let's go fishing.
Right. It was definitely – I mean, they're I do think they both have very, very strong reservations. But,
sure.
But
which
they
is
both,
fair.
But they're both doing the right thing. And they're like, look, you can't say we didn't give him a chance. You can't say that. We're giving him exactly the chance we would have given anybody else who would have walked through these doors.
Right. I thought they were super supportive. And this kind of goes back to what we keep saying. It's like, I don't know if it's production. I don't know if it's like legitimately the anxiety of the partner. But everyone's just like, I don't know if my parents are going to accept them. And then like literally 2 seconds later, the parents maybe ask a tough question or two, but they all accept them.
Right. Because what's the alternative? What's the alternative of not accepting your daughter's husband? Like, you write your daughter out of your life? Like, some parents will do that, but the vast majority of parents aren't interested in that. And they're like, no, we'll figure out a way to make this work. We'll figure out a way to, like, keep this hanging around. That's just – that's more human nature to me.
Yeah. So I don't know. I thought it was so sweet, like, Maurice, like – always kind of longing for this father figure, not having it. And then mm-hmm. Dave saying, you know, like, I've only had daughters. Like, I've never had a son before. It's just like, oh, it was so cute.
Yeah, it was. It was very cute. They were both really sweet to each other. But it's definitely one of those things that, you know, I worry that Maurice is like, yes, I've never had a father figure, but I'm sure he's not great with handling authority. Right? Like, so
that
it's like,
kind of true.
It's one thing to say that when you're looking for somebody who's just going to, like, give you manly advice. Another one when it's actually somebody who's being like, no, I'm saying no, you can't do this. I'm putting my foot down.
Well, that's interesting that you should say that, because I actually thought Maurice showed the parents, both of them, a lot of respect. I mean, it was absolutely. Kind of funny that Jessica comes in there being like, Maurice, do not tell them about the Pearl situation. 2 seconds later, Maurice is telling them about the Pearl situation. And he seemed to, like, listen. Like, he did not have any kind of outburst, mm-hmm. you know, argue with them when they were saying, like, what are you doing? I mean, they said it in a nice way, but, like, you need to go back. Like, this is not okay.
Right.
It kind of makes me feel like he was raised to at least respect his mom. And so, you know, maybe he is more so looking at the streets and the system in a different way than, like, parental figures.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely struck me as I was – because at first I was, like, kind of down on him for, like, immediately spilling the beans about the parole.
I know, right? It's like,
I was
she
like,
just
they
told
this whole,
you.
This conversation, don't tell him. And then I thought about it a little bit more, especially after the conversation with him. And he just kind of went in there and be like, no, I'm not going to lie to these people. I'm not going to keep secrets from them. I'm going to be up front. Like – and how am I going to get their respect? If I'm here to earn their respect, how am I going to get their respect if the first thing I did when I met them was hide something from them and lie to them?
Yes.
Like, that's not going to work.
Right. And I absolutely agree with that point of view, because how many times, Chantel, Pedro, where your partner involves someone in the lie to kind of, like, hide things from their parents, and then it blows up in their face because now the parents don't trust you. So I definitely feel like it was the best course of action in this. But I also feel like Maurice maybe should have pushed back when she told him originally. So she wasn't like,
sure.
What? I
blindsided
just told
by
you.
It. Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, I just told you not to say anything, and you did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. I think this is the best thing for building a legitimate relationship and trust is for Maurice to say something to his parents. So good job, Maurice.
I know. And it took me, like I said, I had to, like, reevaluate it. I was like, dude, you just told her. And I was like, wait a second. It's probably better
oh,
that they said it.
For sure it is. Yeah. The one thing that I kind of thought was funny, but at the same time, it's like, what else are you going to do, right? Is when Dave is having his heart-to-heart with Maurice, and he's basically threatening Maurice. Like, if you have anyone coming after my family, like, you're good. Basically, like, there will be hell to pay. And it's like, Dave, Maurice is, like, a foot taller than you.
Oh,
what are you going to do?
I promise you, Dave has guns in that house.
Oh, God. Well, I'm sure if Maurice has his old crew rolling up, it's not like they're without guns, too, you know?
Right,
but
yeah.
But I just thought it was kind of funny. And it's just like, well, I mean, what else can you say as the father figure, right? Or as the dad? So I get it, but it was just kind of a little funny.
Well, it was a lot of kind of extrapolating where Maurice was coming from to be like, listen, I know you'll understand when I tell you, like, this. Like, this is a way for me to communicate to the person that I think you are how seriously I take this.
Yeah.
Right? With those kind of things. And, like, Maurice seemed to be like, I get it. Like, so I see where he's coming from. Like, I'd be the same way if I was in his shoes. Like, so, you know, it didn't blow up in anybody's face. I thought that was good.
Right. I kind of wonder how long they've been in Vegas already.
Sure.
Because they were asking, like, what have you all been doing all day? And apparently they play a lot of Fortnite.
Yeah. So which is, like, funny, because I always say that, and Dave's like, oh, I didn't have any time to do that. I was too busy working all the time. And it's like, I always hear old men do that, but not old men, you know, people who are – a little bit too old to be in the demographic for video games.
Mm-hmm.
Or in Dave's case, a lot of bit too old to be in the demographic for sure. Demographic video games. And they say that, I don't know how you have time to play video games. And they like golf every other day. And they go out on the boat and they go fishing all the time. And it's like, yeah, all that time. Or they'll just watch like, they watch Fox News for like 3 hours a night. And it's like, yeah, they don't. That's what they play Fortnite.
World War II documentaries.
World War II documentaries, right. There's just like hours and hours of it like every night. And they're like, I didn't have time to play video games. Like, time to watch all these shows about Hitler on the History Channel, but yeah.
Oh, I feel like Dave is everybody's dad a little bit.
A little bit. I see him. Yeah, not totally my dad, but I definitely see the similarity.
Sure.
All right. So somebody who's not totally my dad, though, Tyrese.
Oh, God.
So Tyrese and Shonda. So at this point, Shonda has been out of prison for 2 hours, and she's still licking her fingers and eating the chicken that they got last time we saw them. They have to skip the hotel room because of time constraints, and Shonda is on her way back to the bus station. They talk a little bit in the car about the age difference, since Shonda is the same age as one of Tyrese's children. She says it feels a little bit more weird now that she's out and they're together. But then he goes to drop her off at the bus station, and he gives her $200 so he can take care of her for the trip, because that's what a man is supposed to do. And then she gets on the bus to go to the halfway house. Remember, they're in Chicago, and her halfway house is in Kansas. As he leaves, he tells us he plans on meeting her in Kansas when she's been at the house long enough to get a weekend pass. So the next time, Tyrese is back to singing to himself in the car, and he gets home and pours himself a couple of fingers of whiskey and starts checking his phone because he hasn't heard from Shonda yet, even though he asked her to call when she got there. He's not particularly worried because he feels like it might be the center's fault they weren't letting her make phone calls. But then little Ty gets back home to talk about things and almost makes the mistake of stepping on the rug with his boots on.
Oh, God.
So Tyrese tells little Ty that he only got to spend 3 hours with Shonda. And little Ty knows immediately what that means about his sex life. Little Ty asked how much money he gave her, and Tyrese gets mad that it's none of his business. He said, I gave her $2 million. It's none of your business. Then little Ty tries to explain in small words to Tyrese what a gold digger is and says that maybe Shonda's not quite on Tyrese's level, which I think we've heard before. Now, that was on Quaylen's. Yeah, that's a phrase that is new. Tyrese is insistent that he knows her well enough to know what he's getting into. All right. So what do you think? Is he getting gold dug? Gold digging?
Yeah. I definitely feel so. I kind of feel like there are definitely little, very subtle hints of things that she said that makes me feel like this girl's going to ghost this guy at some point, right? Like,
sure.
She's just straight up going to ghost him. Like, I would not be surprised if she just never messaged him back ever again.
She got to Kansas. She's like, listen, I'm a few hundred miles away from this guy.
Yep, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does he actually know which halfway house she's in, or does he just know Kansas? Right. So I think like that might be part of it, too. Like if she didn't tell him which halfway house it was, then maybe she would feel safer. Like, oh, he can't find me. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were things that she said, like, or that she did, like she said, you know, oh, his age didn't seem like that big of a deal when we were just like writing. But I think physically it was a big deal.
Yeah.
She didn't seem like she was super excited to kiss him. And it wasn't like she was pulling away. But when he went to kiss her, it was just like she was like almost like nervous laughing in his face. Like she didn't want it happening.
Mm-hmm. So the one I noticed, the thing that got me was when he gave her the money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And she didn't have to beg for it or really ask for it like some of the other people, but she kind of said it and he gave her the money and she was like, oh, gee, thanks. And as soon as she walked away, her face just like beamed and lit up. She was like,
yeah,
that's right.
Score.
Got the money. Score. Yeah. It definitely looked like somebody who just found $200 on the street. Like, awesome.
Like, right.
But not in the way and then when he came back, so she went right back to being that face. You know, it was like definitely the face of someone who feels like she pulled something over on somebody to get that money. Not somebody who was like, oh, I'm very grateful that this person who cares so much for me thought to take care of me by giving me this money. It was just like, score. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, as much as I kind of liked her as a person, like, and not of the product of the things that she's done, but like, she just seemed like a nice, somewhat genuine person. I felt that she felt guilty about kind of using these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I kind of feel like she thinks it's surviving.
Right.
You know, like even when they were kind of talking about, you know, why she needed the money, she was like, well, I need hygiene stuff. She needed to buy toiletries, like, back at the halfway house. There were things that she needed. And, yeah. like, what else would she do if she didn't have this money?
Right. Because I don't even know, because it's in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. And, again, I don't know the system very well. But mm-hmm. I do know there's a gigantic federal prison in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. Sure. Right? And that's, like, the industry for the town. So if there's a bunch of halfway houses, like, nearby, what jobs are you going to get? There's not right. jobs out there for all these prisoners that got out. I don't know.
Sure. Sure. So I don't know. It's just – I kind of feel like it's kind of one of those things where people kind of justified in their mind, like, I steal because I need to live. I right. need to survive. Like, that's why I stole this food.
You yes. know?
And so yeah. I kind of feel like that's her is like not necessarily stealing, but like maybe pretending and oh,
yeah.
lying
yeah.
to get –
and misleading.
You know,
right. Right. But there's a direct line, and it's just that's the way people go is at some point some people do have to steal to get food, right? And
yes,
that is what it is. But what happens is sometimes, not all the time, not often, sometimes they still are using that justification when they're stealing to buy a BMW.
Sure. Right? Yeah. No, that's true.
They're still like, and I gotta get by. Yeah.
The justification, I think, when it kind of escalates to that is, well, you know, someone else has the ability to have that and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm just trying to make things equal.
Yeah. Yeah. And we see that from some other people that they also just don't – there's just not that separation for me and like between needs and wants, right?
Right.
And like I needed this yeah. and when I stole because I needed, the next thing that I want, I just put in the need category and now I have – now I'm justified for being able to steal to get it.
Right. Right. Okay, why is little Ty, Tyrese's son, asking him about the sex? It's like, what? This is your dad. Did you forget that this is your father?
So I don't know. That was definitely a relationship with my father I do not have.
I was going to – okay,
anywhere
I thought that was going to go a different way, mister.
No.
I was like, gross.
No. Because not only did little Ty have an opinion about his dad, mm-hmm. Tyrese had an opinion about little Ty.
God.
Right? Because he said something like, oh, I guess you guys didn't get to do it. He's like, listen, not everybody is like you, son. Not everybody only does that all the time. It's like, oh,
I know.
I want
like,
to.
Both of you. Gross. Father, son, come on. There's right. like some boundaries, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in this context. We're not talking about like having the birds and the bees talk.
Sure.
Like this
yeah.
is talking about banging your prison girlfriend. Like, I don't think this is a topic of conversation a father son should be
that.
Having.
I don't need that in my life. I agree with you. Don't need
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Okay. So then Tyrese also says this thing that I'm just like, eh. He says he would know if he was being used. It's like, how? How would you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question because like, do you think people who are serial users just are really obvious about it? Like they're. Yeah. Like they're kind of pros at it, right? Like
yes,
the whole
I was gonna
point
say,
is
that's
if you
how
knew,
they get really
that's
good
how they
at
get
it.
You is they
yeah.
they use you without you knowing you're being used. Like so, I don't know. He just very much he thinks very highly of himself. He thinks he's a very smart person, and so he's like, if I couldn't be fooled because I'm a smart person, right? So
right.
if I'm not, if I, you know, if I think something, it must be right, and that's, you know, wrong. Smart people get fooled all the time. Especially
sure.
when they're desperate for stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on, let's talk Chevelle and Quaylen. Quaylen is having his welcome home party, and his mom and sister are there. Chevelle is concerned about her mom and Sylvia and Quaylandria meeting. Quaylandria seems to bond with Myla, and everyone is playing nice. Chevelle has a surprise for Quaylen and tells him to close his eyes, and everybody in the party follows them outside for the big reveal, which is the truck she had bought him. Quaylen is surprised and he's excited, but says he doesn't have a driver's license, so he can't be driving that car. So his mom says he looks like a grown man in that truck. Quaylen does want to test drive it, but he's not going to go back to prison for driving without a license. D-Mark, Chevelle's cousin, is brooding in the corner saying he's not buying any of this, and he thinks that Quaylen's thing is all an act. So Coilandria flags down Sylvia, Chevelle's mom. They both agree that it's too much for Chevelle to spend that much on him for the truck. Coilandria says she doesn't like how Quaylen is being bribed. And Sylvia says they don't know if Quaylen asked for it. And she feels like Chevelle is being used. Why Coilandria is insulted by this because Quaylen wasn't raised to be a user. Coilandria's mom vibes are going off, and she thinks Quaylen is being bought and bribed to stay with Chevelle, and Sylvia says her mom vibes are going off, and she thinks that Chevelle is being used. So D-Mark continues to be a naysayer, saying that, what could you possibly talk about when you're in prison? He's concerned that they don't know each other. He confronts Quaylen and says that he's worried that Quaylen is going to get what he can get and then slide. Quaylen thinks that D-Mark is just trying to rile him up to get a reaction out of him. D-Mark gives it, 6 months, max. Speaking of confrontations, Quaylen's sister confronts Chevelle over Quaylen living with her. She reminds Chevelle about the street life in Kansas City, and she doesn't think that Quaylen is set up for success. She points out that Quaylen was shot and left for dead, and isn't this a concern? Chevelle says something like that could happen pretty much anywhere. His sister says that she's not going to disrespect Chevelle in her home, but if anything happens to Quaylen, there will be problems. Quaylen feels like people are judging him, but he will hear what people have to say out of respect. But he's not trying to make anyone happy but himself. Besides, he knows he still has his family in Houston to fall back on, worst case scenario. Alright, so do you think D-Mark's prediction is correct and that this relationship has 6 months max?
No, I'm not saying that because I think they are like, you know, a great match and are truly going to be great together, but I think Chevelle will try to, if everything goes to crap, right? Mm-hmm. Things aren't going well. She will keep bribing. She will bribe him, right? If she's not doing it now, then she will change to bribing him to keep him around, and he'll stay around for more than 6 months to get some free crap.
Like, I don't think so. So I think like my kind of take on where Quaylen's head is, mm-hmm. is that this is the first chance he's had to really be a man. I feel like I get like that kind of vibe. Like all he wants to do is he wants to be a good man. And mm-hmm. he thinks that being a good man means being a family man, right?
Sure.
Well, I think by Chevelle trying to do everything for him, it's going to make him feel less like a man. Like, yes, he's super stoked about this truck, but he didn't earn it. You know, mm-hmm. it was given to him. So I feel like maybe in the back of his mind, he's going to feel like, hey, yeah, this woman's holding it down for me. She's pretty much providing everything for me. Like, what if he has a problem getting a job? I think that's going to really mess with his idea of his role as a man in the family. And I think that he is going to kind of take how Chevelle treats him and kind of interpret that as she makes him feel like less of a man. And mm-hmm. because he has this easy option, he has his mom and his sister whispering in his ear. I think he's going to bounce.
No. So it's more about feeling like he wants to feel like a man, but she's only going to make him feel like a kept man.
Yeah.
Right? Like, here's all the stuff you need. I have it for you, because he's going to have trouble finding a job. And that's interesting because that goes beyond prison. That's just a like plague across the country is like men who are underemployed and unemployed and are like, you know, dependent on the women and they're in relationships with to like keep the family afloat. At the mm-hmm. same time, they're not accepting of the other roles in the household that could be filled.
Sure.
Right? Right? Yeah. So, because I don't know that he's going to be okay. If you're worried about him, he'll be like a man, right? And especially, you know, it seems like in the environment he came from, like, you know, changing diapers and watching the kids and being a house husband is not going to make him feel like a man, right? Even if he's pulling his share.
Well, I think especially in his situation is like he wants to feel like he's been established. I think that's a different scenario than, let's say, another person who's been working for, you know, like 5 years in their life and then, you know, they have a child and then mm-hmm. they end up being the house husband. I think that's very different because I feel like it feels more like a choice. you know, in their situation. They've had a chance to kind of establish themselves as someone in the working world. I think Quaylen, like, just, you know, and I mean, his sister even brings it up. Like, he went to jail when he was 19. Like, he's still stuck in that mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. She definitely had the idea of the, like, literal arrested development. Like, once he went to jail when he's 17, he was like, physically, he's a man. Mentally, he's still 17. Like,
right. Okay. You're right. He's 17. Yes. And 17 is even worse than 19. Even worse than 19. Not even, like, out in the world. Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, just, yeah. And so that is a lot of it, is you kind of get the vibe that he's cosplaying what he's supposed to be.
Right.
Right. He doesn't know what he's supposed to be. Right. Yeah, and so he's like, what is this supposed to look like? I'll just pretend to be that. And so he is very lost. My issue was just like, I don't know, 3 to 6 months seems awful quick for this whole process to play out. I'm not saying it won't play out like that. I was saying more on the scale of like 9 months to a year for it to play out rather than 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, the reality is like where we are in the timeline of everything. Like, this is happening pre-pandemic.
Yes.
So I kind of feel like that is going to influence like the amount of time. It'll either speed it up or draw it out.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, that's everybody. Everybody has been kind of whatever was going on in your life. Like, same with the jail thing. Like, I'm still stuck in March for a lot of stuff, a lot of aspects of my life.
Yeah. Right? So I could see them, you know, longer because they're like less options all around, like less employment options, maybe less of an opportunity for him to get to his family. Maybe he's needed there.
Right. Right. You know? I do buck up against, like, you know, Quinandria, his sister, her idea of it, like, oh, you know, the bad streets of Kansas City. There are definitely bad streets in Houston, right?
Yeah, right.
I'm with Chevelle on that. If he's going to find trouble, he's going to find it wherever he is, right? Because he's going to go to Houston and he won't run with the exact same people, but he's going to go to the same kind of places and run into the same kind of people and do the same kind of things. It'll just be a new group of people unless he's changed. And if he's changed, then being in Kansas City is not going to be that big of a difference anyway.
Yeah, the only thing that she kind of brought up that I was like, oh, yeah, is like, how traumatic would it be if you were like shot and you had to walk by the place that you were shot all the time? I'm sure that that would bring up some kind of emotion or negative something or other. But I mean, that's the only part that I was like, oh, yeah, I wouldn't want to like.
Right. Walk and I guess part of this and this comes down, this is the same thing we have with Maurice and Jessica. Okay, you're in Kansas City. Why do you have to be in the same block in Kansas City that you got shot in? That's a big city. Just go somewhere else. Right. Like,
yeah, definitely. So I don't know. This party was really interesting. I thought all the family kind of had their say.
Right.
I think that, you know, Quaylen's family actually was super respectful while also voicing their concerns.
Totally.
But it was just so funny to me how D-Mark was like sulking in the corner the entire time.
Right. Right.
In his little Rocky workout.
And I think Quaylen handled the party as well as he could. Like, D-Mark's going to yell at him and talk to him. There's literally nothing he can say that's going to change D-Mark's mind right now. Nothing at all. And he recognized that.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So moving on. Let's talk about the people that were affected by the pandemic because we just mentioned it. And that's Scott and Lindsay. I think we're going to have a little bit of a slight disagreement on this one. So Scott gets a voicemail from Lindsay after 16 other missed calls, saying that she's on her way out of prison and she's getting on the plane now. The other good news is that instead of having to go to the halfway house, she's going to be put on house arrest. Now, this is because of the COVID pandemic. It's safer for people to be in the houses than in the halfway house. But because of that, the timeline is off by 4 months and the house is not Lindsay ready just yet. So next up, we see Lindsay exploring Sky Harbor Airport in the middle of the night, telling us a bit about her history. She says she stayed out of legal trouble until she was about 22, but eventually went to prison because guns and drugs don't mix. She calls her family and tells Miley that she'll be coming straight home, but the logistics of getting Miley to the house in Mississippi are all complicated by coronavirus quarantine restrictions. She talks a lot about how well she and Scott got along together, but it seems like what she liked about him seems to mostly revolve around the money he can and does provide for her. Scott doesn't know that this is not her first gold-digging relationship, and she has justified this in saying that Scott likes to take care of her. The second attempt to pick Lindsay up at the airport is not as fancy as the first attempt. Since he's just going in an old Ford Ranger from his work, I guess, to meet Lindsay for the first time ever in person. He says that she's the love of his life and wants to marry her. Back on the plane and at the airport, Lindsay tells us how close her relationship with Scott has been. Finally, they meet at the airport and hug and give, like, very chaste kisses to each other. And then Lindsay tells us that she thought he'd be taller. And then they go to the truck, which we, again, said is a white work truck, bottom-of-the-line truck. And all Lindsay can do is complain about it. She's like, I didn't expect a limo, but It doesn't get any better when they get to the house, which, you know, let's remind everyone, she wasn't supposed to be moving into for another 4 months. Right now, all that's kind of finished, mostly finished, is her closet. And she says the condition of the house is bullshit and she won't put up with it. Her way of not putting up with it is to have, let's say, a conversation with Scott about what he all needs to do. She complains that the house looks like a construction zone, which, let's be real, it does. Mm-hmm. Scott brushes the whole thing off and says he'll be done with the house in a year. He blames prison for making it too hard to do any kind of planning. She's mostly upset that there is essentially no furniture in the house and that everything is too dirty for her to even walk around in bare feet. She says she was promised Disney World but was given the county fair. Then he calls her ungrateful and she ends up losing her shit and screaming and shutting down. All right, so in regards of the house condition specifically, mm-hmm. are you Team Scott or Team Lindsay?
She's not wrong. you know what I'm saying? Like, she's not wrong. However, like, I am, like, baffled why she thinks she's entitled. She's like, you know, like, this was, like, she deserves this, coming to her dream home. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you see the pictures of all the things that, you know, should have been on the vision board. Like, it is fancy. What she was expecting was so, like, I don't know. Like, why does she think she deserves, like, this super fancy house? And then she throws an absolute tantrum when she doesn't have it. Now, I get that there are, like, she wasn't lying. Like, those floors were disgusting. Like,
they were.
You could have mopped up, like, vacuumed. Like, even in the garage, because they were saying that Miley Grace's room was going to be the garage converted into something.
Yes.
It's kind of like, there was a bunch of crap in there. You couldn't even see the floor. It was just a bunch of construction junk and materials and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what are you going to do? Okay, so this makes me question severely a few things about Scott. One, how rich is he really that he couldn't buy a home already kind of turnkey to begin with?
Right.
That had a bedroom for the daughter so that they didn't have to
convert a garage.
Right. All right. Okay. So maybe he works in construction, or maybe he just, like, finds that enjoyable. And so maybe he, like, intentionally didn't buy a huge house and was like, oh, well, I'll just do, like, the fixer-upper thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. How was this any better? Like, has it been 3 months since she was supposed to move in the first time? So it's kind of like, I would think it should be at some level better than what it was just based on when he thought she was coming back the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he literally had a closet done. Like, he was supposed to redo at least 5 or 6 rooms, right? One of them is converting a garage, which is hard because then you have to have HVAC and stuff into it, right? So that's not nothing, especially in Mississippi. You're not living in Mississippi. You're not putting Miley Grace in a garage with no air conditioning in Mississippi. That's just cruel, right?
Yeah, that's like trapping your dog in a car with the windows up.
Right.
Don't do that.
So that wasn't going to happen. And, like, you know, you're right. She was already supposed to have been there pretty close to around this time because she got delayed, and she was right. He'd done basically nothing.
Yeah. Like, just things like just looking around the house. It was like,
how is he living? Yeah.
Yeah. The vents were, like, unscrewed and just kind of laying off to the side. Like, just the filth of it. The carpets are disgusting. Like, how everything was painted, it was like you could still see painter's tape up, but then, like, halfway painted like walls. Like, it was,
it looked like he started
really
like 10 or 15 jobs and then didn't finish any of them.
Right.
Because even the closet, he was like, this is the closet, just like in the magazine. And he was like, it's almost done. He was like, well, I don't understand. And, yeah. And I was kind of with her. I was like, oh, you know what? He didn't think you were going to be there for another 4 months. So, you know, you got to give him a little leeway. But then she was like, when's it going to be done? And he was like, oh, about a year. He's like, no. Because I get that her – I'm totally with you that her expectations were way too high.
Oh,
but
sure.
But, like, he ripped stuff out without the replacements. You know what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
Like, if it's like that. This is the bathroom sink I wanted. It'd be like, great. When we get that bathroom sink, we will take this one out and put a new one in. Don't take this one out and then not order the other one. And no, and she was right with this. No furniture at all.
Right.
Like, what has he been doing? That's what I couldn't figure out. Like, where's he living?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but I feel like this is my kind of take and theory on him and his money situation. I feel like he's just one of those guys who's just lived really frugally. There's nothing to kind of indicate that he really is this super rich guy. I kind of just feel like he's one of those guys who is in his life, since he's been by himself, like just lived super frugally because he doesn't need much. And so just by nature of, you know, not spending his money, he does have a decent amount of money like set aside. And so, you know, when he ends up dating this baby, basically sugar baby, who is demanding all these things, it's like, yeah, I have money for that. Why not? I'm not spending it on myself. I'll spend it on you. But it's like there are limits to that because he isn't super rich.
Right. And like, so why? Because why? He brought in this interior designer at the beginning.
Yeah,
and then decided to do it all himself? Like, what was that?
Yeah, that I was super suspicious about because I actually wrote that in my notes too. It's like, why did he ask this interior designer, but he never ordered the furniture? Like, that makes no sense. Like, oh, I want this, this, and this. It's like she was only there to have that scene with him so he had an excuse to talk to someone about his relationship, but it's like he didn't actually use her. And I think he also does have a very skewed idea of, you know, Lindsay's like part in all this. Because so we talk about this all the time. Like, we're kind of okay with transactional relationships. And at the beginning of like meeting them, it seems like they're both kind of on the same page about this transactional relationship.
Right.
He has the money. She has like the looks and attractiveness. Mm-hmm. However, he did say something that made me feel like, no, I don't think he realizes this is a transactional relationship. And that's when he says, oh, I could pick her up on a bicycle and she would be okay. It's like, no, she definitely would not be okay with
no.
that.
No, and she definitely has felt like her feelings are very clear. You know, this was a transactional relationship and you did not hold up your end of the bargain.
Right. So I just kind of
Which
feel
is why
like,
she felt entitled to it because she was like,
yes.
We had an agreement and we had a deal here and You didn't hold up your end.
Right. So guess what? Scott is not getting any sex tonight.
No.
And so, you know, but that's part of the transaction. So it's kind of like your transaction is falling apart because you're both not meeting your end of the bargain.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about her breakdown for a second.
Okay.
So like I said, I didn't think Lindsay was wrong, but how she generally reacted to this was just like, wow, this girl's batshit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at first, she just like complained a lot, right?
Right.
And she was like nitpicking him. And okay, and like I said, I didn't think she was wrong. Like, when she talked about how dirty the floors are and she couldn't walk around there without shoes, yeah, guess what? I wouldn't be doing that either.
Right.
I get that.
Right.
She didn't once balance that out with any kind of appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's where it's kind of like, Lindsay, your reaction. And then just her screaming at him. I was just like, what
yeah.
is going
and
on
And at some
right
point
now?
She just got to the point where she just was just screaming. Not screaming
yes.
words or like yelling, just
oh,
screaming.
Yeah. Just like, aah! Out of
yeah.
frustration, but
yeah.
much more violently.
Right. Like, it's definitely, you, if a five-year-old did
Warrior
that, you'd be
cry.
Like, you,
yeah.
if I was saying a five-year-old would do that, and you'd be like, use your words.
Right. Yeah, like rocking back and forth, screaming in the corner.
Oof. Right, yeah.
It was
right.
tough. Yeah, I don't know where they're going to go from there.
Right,
but
it's not anywhere good, right?
No. Speaking of not anywhere good, Destiny is pissed that her credit card was declined at the furniture store. So as soon as she sees Sean, she confronts him. Sean says maybe she got the wrong PIN because there was enough money. And then Destiny insists that the card was canceled by the user. So then Sean becomes a bundle of excuses. I don't know. I couldn't call the bank. I didn't know the number. I don't know. Maybe like something got wrong in the system. So Sean is getting concerned because he recognizes he created a huge monster by giving Destiny everything she wanted and giving in to all of her demands. Sean tells her that she's the best thing that ever happened to him, and then lets it slip that he was seeing someone else around the same time they started their relationship. And he admits to us that that someone else was Kelly. Destiny accuses him of lying again, and she warns him that more lies means that she'll be bouncing. Sean and Hector go out to go ring shopping. Hector tells Sean that his wife thinks Destiny is a little wild, and Sean actually agrees, but opposites attract, right? Hector says, in songs, yes, but in real life, not so much. Hector thinks that Sean needs to pump the brakes with the whole marriage thing and tells him that he's crazy. Sean is willing to spend $2,000 on a rose gold halo diamond ring with side stones. Conveniently, the ring he picks out is $2,000. Hector is trying to talk some reason into him. He says that, you know, Sean is just straight up dumb. Hector asks why he didn't feel this way about Kelly. We also find out that Kelly isn't allowing Sean to see the kids as long as, quote, that whore, unquote, is around. Hector thinks that Destiny will be around for, you know, 30 days, and him risking his kids just isn't worth it. Destiny is getting used to cooking on a real stovetop. We also find out that her drink of choice in prison was hand sanitizer with a ton of Kool-Aid mixed in. That was one of those commercial break scenes. Uh-huh. Destiny is showing off all of the things that she brought to Sean as Sean checks his bank statement and asks her about some of the charges. Destiny has gone crazy shopping and making withdrawals at the casino. Sean says that at this rate, they will be broke in 2 months. Destiny says that she's having fun and all the spending makes her happy. Sean points out that she's replacing one addiction for another. Destiny then reveals that her drug of choice is heroin, and the last time she did heroin was 3 months ago in prison. Destiny says she won't spend any money, but she's going to head to the pool, and she wants Sean to blow up an inflatable unicorn for her. So while he's outside doing that, Kelly calls. He has Kelly on speakerphone, so Destiny actually can hear everything. And then Destiny comes out to ask who it is, and he says it's Kelly, and he has to have a relationship with her, and Destiny demands that he get a plane ticket for her right now. Destiny is done with all his lies, and she wants to break his face. She keeps saying that she's done and storms out of the house. Sean follows her outside. Destiny says she feels disrespected. Sean says she's not understanding and there's nothing happening. And then Sean keeps saying that he's sorry, and Destiny just calls him a liar. Sean says that he has to go to work and he doesn't want to leave things like this. Sean gets to his truck to drive to work as Destiny comes out of left field and punches him in the face as Sean claims he's done.
He said he's done with the show, by the way. Not done with her. He's done with the show.
Who knows what he's actually done with. Done looking the fool. I don't know. So what do you think is the worst thing that Destiny did all of these segments? Was it spending all of Sean's money? Getting crazy jealous over Kelly, calling Sean a liar when she is also lying about things, or punching him in the face?
Well, I mean, you know me enough that to me, the thing that made me most mad was the money. Was the money. And it was, and just like, it's really hard for me for somebody who just doesn't seem to understand that money is real.
Yes, like, she definitely doesn't.
Like, money is real and I have to earn that money. You can't just spend it because you want to spend it. Like, it doesn't, it's not, it's gone. Like, it's gone, right? And so, and it was funny because, you know, Hector said 30 days, right?
Yeah.
And I think he was
literally the next day.
Right. Well, I mean, okay. And I was like, I actually think she might hang around for longer because I think the real thing is 60 days when he's out of money.
Yes, like, right. When Sean says he's out of money in 60 days. Yeah, for sure.
That's when she's gone. I agree. Yeah.
And when it really comes down to, well, who knows?
Because she's going to blame him. He's going to be out of money and she's going to be like, well, how are you out of money? And he was like, because you spent it all.
I can see it being sooner because if he continues to – let's be real here. Sean is a pathological liar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's no saint. Definitely no.
Right. And he's doing it to keep himself out of trouble, to keep himself from having these like difficult conversations about money. And so I absolutely believe that he canceled that card so she couldn't use it.
He 100% canceled that card he couldn't use it.
Right?
And then is like, a terrible liar about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I didn't really call the bank because it was closed and I didn't have the number because I didn't have my card. And she's like, you didn't Google that shit? Like, what's wrong with you?
He's like, my phone was broken or something. I don't know.
I can just see him like so he knows he has 2 months worth of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not gonna let her continue on. He is going to try to passive aggressively or sneaky manipulative, try to prevent her from spending the money without actually having to tell her. And so she's gonna get super frustrated because all of a sudden she's using these cards. I don't know what's happening. Like they're all like, you know, canceled. Like, it was just a suspicious charge. I got a fraudulent text and blah, 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 blah. And I didn't answer it in time. So he's just going to continue doing this. And it's going to be more and more difficult for her to spend the money. And she's going to get frustrated. And I think that's going to happen way before the 60 days.
I guess that's true. Because she doesn't. And it's totally him. He's so afraid that she's going to leave, which is a legit fear because she's going to leave. But it's so weird that he's always so afraid that she's going to leave over everything. But it's also like, I love her so much and she's my future. And it's like, but because he did that. He said, chillax on the spending, right?
Yeah, right.
And she blew a gasket and was like, what do you mean chillax? Why can't I just spend whatever I want? And it was a simple answer. You're spending more money than I make. Like, I'm going to go broke. I will not have any money if you keep spending at this rate, right? Which I don't know if she would understand or not. But that's what you need to say, right? It's a simple equation. There's how much money comes in and how much money goes out. But, I mean, I guess he also has to do that because I'm sure he lied to her tremendously about how much money he makes.
Oh, absolutely. What I find really odd about Sean is – and this kind of makes me feel like how much of this is set up or, you know, fake or whatever.
Sure.
Is just I am confused how he could be so one way with Kelly. Like, he's so obviously avoidant of any kind of like long-term commitment, and then like turn around and with
and
destiny
sell
just
his
be this
soul for her. Yeah,
desperate, so desperate for her. Like, it makes no sense to me.
And it's also tricky too because like another example of him just avoiding the conflict. All to no end, to like not even thinking two steps ahead, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is him. I 100% believe that they had a talk about Kelly and he promised he wouldn't talk to her anymore, except unless it was like about the kids, about logistics for the kids. That's all I will talk to her about. And I am very confident that he promised that to her. And when he promised it, had no intention of doing that.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. Because, okay, let's be real here. Why is he still talking to Kelly about even relationship things that have nothing to do with kids? And I get, in a weird way, it does have something to do with his kids, because the reason why Kelly's asking is because she doesn't want her kids seeing Sean as long as he's with Destiny. But I also kind of feel like Sean is also one of those people that just needs to have someone on the back burner. You know,
mm-hmm.
He is going to string Kelly along for the rest of her freaking life. She needs to get the fuck out of there. This guy is worthless piece of garbage. Like, he has not treated you right. He has not given you anything that you needed in life,
right?
Except possibly your kids. But he isn't going to give you anything that you ever want in life. And it's just like, get rid of this guy. Get rid of the possibility of ever getting back together with this trash man.
He's not a good guy. Not a good guy. Because it's I guess it's holding that on. But it's like, for me, it's like, yes, I get that people would be jealous if you were talking to your ex all the time, you know, even if it was a kid thing, right? Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I'm not going to say it's not an ideal way to feel, but if you feel that way, then you need to know if you're in a relationship with someone that's going to be talking to the kids, so you can end it, right? So you can both be on the same page with stuff. He's just like, no, I'd rather just lie to her and keep her around. Like, I don't.
Well, I think Destiny brought up a good point too, is I think his youngest kid is 8. Like, they're capable of calling themselves. And so I think that's why Destiny kind of feels like, well, why do you have to talk to Kelly? Mm-hmm. Like, you could have the kids talk to you, and I don't know. I mean,
at the end of the day, if Sean wants to do it, and that's what Sean wants, and he wants to talk, then his answer should be, I don't need to talk to her. I like talking to her. It's not a romantic thing. She's a, she's a friend of mine. We raise kids together. We, you know, it's like talking to your coworker. Like, you either live with that or you don't. And not, you know what I'm saying? And she, and if she might choose to say, no, I'd rather not that, not deal with that. Right. And that's okay. That's her choice. Right.
Right.
But to lie to her and say, all right, I won't talk to her anymore. And then, you know, because I'm sure he doesn't argue back. Right. He doesn't say any of the reasons that he does things. Why are you talking to her? Well, how can we fix this? You know, I get, why can't I spend this money? Just chill out. Just slow down. Like, he doesn't actually have any substantive thing that he says. I think he thinks it. I don't think he's so dumb that he doesn't have reasons for what it is.
Oh, I think he's dumb.
Oh, he's very
dumb. I don't think he has reasons. He just knows, no money. Those are his reasons. He's money not gone, a really complex bad. Thinking person.
Right. And so then why does
she
it so
spend
then,
money? I don't have money.
Yeah. I like talk Kelly.
Yeah.
Like, fun. Really, I mean, probably because he doesn't have anybody else. I don't think he has a lot of people to talk to about the relationship anyway.
Hector! He has Hector, who, by the way, is a gem.
Yeah.
I'm like, Hector right, is the friend that everybody needs. He speaks reason. He's really funny about it.
Uh-huh.
But it's just like, and he's not like, I don't know, he's not like that guy who's like hammer, like, bro, you're a fucking idiot. Blah, blah. I mean, yeah, he says it, but in a way that's like, I think, you know, not super intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but it is definitely, it's tricky because it's almost like, yeah, she is the gatekeeper for the kids, right? And that is an issue. Yes, my kids can call and talk to me, but they can't come over to this house until I get things straight with Kelly. Like, so that's going to have to be. And it's almost one of those things that if he was really serious about that, though, then he would involve Destiny in that process as well.
Sure.
Right? And he's not. Like, he's counterintuitively, well, that's because he's dumb. He just says what he thinks. And it's like, maybe the woman who you're trying to get the approval of, you know, so your new girlfriend can meet your kids, isn't the person you should be talking trash to your about your girlfriend with.
God.
Telling her all the crap she's doing.
He's not a smart man. He is not a smart man.
All right. Is there one more?
Yep.
All right. Oh, right, Heather.
Yes.
So we start with Heather and Dylan this time. So we start at Heather's house as she's getting out of the shower and getting ready for her day. It's the day that Dylan is getting out. Like everyone else, she is nervous and excited about it and feels like it's time for her life to actually continue. She feels like the time he's been in there, her life has been like on pause. She tells us again that she considers herself basically already married to him. But they aren't legally married. They were just engaged. They talk a little bit about what she's packed for the trip and how ripped Dylan got in prison. He actually did get pretty ripped in prison.
Yeah, he did.
She is very frustrated that she never got to have sex with Dylan, and she says that's the one thing that has to happen. She does also tell us that she's worried about his pre-prison player reputation, which, you know, probably is not going to be helped with the new ripped body, before telling us that she's a believer in vision boards and that her vision boards have manifested everything she wanted, including Dylan. Going more into her history, she tells us about how her mom and stepfather sent her away to a camp for troubled teens where sadly and tragically she was raped when she was 14. Dylan knows about this history, but she has kept it a secret from basically everyone else. So then she pulls up to the prison gates and starts the wait for Dylan to emerge. He starts walking down the drive and she shakes her ass at him before running and jumping into his arms. At that point, we get to meet Dylan, who immediately calls his drug dealing enterprise entrepreneurship.
Oh, God.
He's been dealing and been in and out of prison for basically all of his adult life, and this 5-year stint was the longest yet. He says that the stability of having Heather on the outside is what got him through. Once he's out, he goes to change up the trunk of a car, and then they basically just have their hands all over each other. Dylan is worried that Heather might be a little obsessive because after they were dating for like 3 months, she got his name tattooed onto herself in 3 different places in 3 different languages.
God.
Their first stop after they get out, and this is the last we see them, is a car wash where it's heavily implied, since they were making out and watching some nude videos she made for him, that they had sex in the car while going through the car wash. So, oh, yikes.
Logistically, that seems like not good, right? Like,
I mean,
limited in space.
Limited in time.
Limited, yes. Because the car wash is like, what, 4 or 5 minutes, or at least the part where they're all covered.
Where they're
in
covered
the
up, right? Because then you come out. I feel like the longest part of a car wash is when you're under the fan and like the thing. So yeah, it. I would say under 2 minutes. Yes.
Right. And it just logistically doesn't seem good.
Yeah, it seems like I would rather. Can we just wait another 20 minutes and like do this right? Like that would be much. I mean,
she's gonna do it again.
Yeah, they're gonna do it again in 20 minutes. So yeah, fair enough, but. I don't know. It's just – and this is one where you're like, she was there. And now you feel like really mixed feelings on this because of the trauma, right?
Right. Okay. So, yes, let's kind of talk about Heather. I think she went through this really super tragic thing, and I think it really kind of messed her up. I feel like because – and let's be real here. It's because she decided – to open up to this person, right? Mm-hmm. She decided to open up to Dylan because she said she had never told anyone what had happened to her. She never talked about her trauma before. It's like in her choosing Dylan, she has chosen to feel this really intense connection with him because like she made herself really vulnerable. And I get that. But at the same time, it's like, well, did you choose wisely? Because there were certainly a lot of yellow/red flags that she had talked about, like maybe Dylan wasn't the best person to really kind of choose to have this intense connection with. Because she talks about, you know, like Dylan having sex with everyone, and that made me pause. I was like, is Dylan bi? Does she mean everyone as in like everyone? She definitely implied like, and he was having sex with everyone. It's just like, oh, okay. So now you got to worry about when you mean everyone, you mean everyone. All right. And then I just feel like it's at least on the one hand, she hasn't tried to hide how intense she feels and like her intense plans with him. So, I mean, he knows, but I mean, he talked about the tattoo as saying like, that's a lot.
Yeah. I don't know, but his intensity level is not the same as hers.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Not. Definitely not.
And he said that before he went into prison, you know, he was a big player. Right. Yep. And like, you know, we talked about that with Quaylen a lot. People don't really change that much necessarily, right? They kind of get frozen with where they were maturity-wise. And let's face it, he is going to attract a lot of women.
Like, oh, God. Yeah, he is. He is an attractive-looking guy. Yeah, I feel like maybe he's attracting a lot of men too, Mr. O?
He attracts whatever he wants to attract. Like, he's going to get it, right?
Right. So, oh, my God. He is a very good-looking man. The body helps.
The body, The body is a huge part of it. Like, he's not an ugly face, but like the body is like
he definitely has like a exotic look. You know what it kind of reminded me of is what do they call it? Hot felon, the guy that had his he went viral. His mugshot went viral, and then now he's like legitimately like a model, and I think he's. He knocked up the Top Shop air or something like that. Geez. So, yeah, he's like in the celebrity world or whatever. But it started off with his mugshot. But they have the same kind of look, you know, like kind of like dark skin, but like light eyes and like angular features. Yeah. Like he is a very good looking man. They're a good looking couple, you know.
Sure.
Both of them. What I kind of felt like would be super scary for him is that she is like, she talks about it openly. She wants to get married. I mean, you know, I know she says that he started calling her his wife, but it's like, I feel like you might have planted those seeds. I don't know. Maybe shown him your vision board. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, she wants to get married. She wants to have kids. She wants this like settled down, like very white picket fence life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, is he on board with this? Like,
yeah.
How are you guys going to get that?
I don't know that he did much. I feel like he did enough to keep her around. Like, I think he liked that she was around, you know, while he was in prison, because in prison, I don't think there was a whole bunch of other people. A little hard to do that player thing when you're like, you know, that, but. Yeah, I just didn't get the idea that he is anywhere near where she is in terms of where this relationship stands.
Right. And I think, like, and almost all the men that are in the same position, you know, where it's like they kind of go along with this idea. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm sure that does sound better than what your prison situation is. So if you're in prison and you're kind of thinking about like, oh, well, I will have someone who loves me. I will like have a home. You know, we can share this life together. Like that sounds all good and fine when you're in prison.
Yeah. But especially then the thing that seems to sell most of them, they all mention it. Someone who will cook for me.
Like, oh God. Well, because prison food sucks, right? I mean, right. Everybody says that.
Right.
But then when they're actually out and about in the real world, it's just like, you remember that like life isn't just about what's at home.
Right.
You know, life is also about like, well, what are you doing? Who's your circle of friends? Like, what are you going to do on a Friday night? Like, you know, and so then it becomes this like bigger world that it's like weird to me that they don't actually think about.
Yeah. I mean,
or it doesn't seem that it seems like they forget about it.
Yeah. Because it does tend to be the people on the outside that kind of want to build this us versus the world. Like, we're just going to, it's going to be our home and we'll be in there and it'll take care of it. And it's like, yeah, coming out of prison, you're right. It sounds better than prison. But once you're like, oh, no, wait, I have to stay in the house all the time with you. That's what you're expecting me to do. Then it's like,
you're like, that's kind of another form of prison.
Yeah. That's kind of similar. This is just the same thing with better food and more sex. Like, that's all this is.
God. Yeah. I just, her tattoo situation, just, I'm just like, what are you doing?
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, that is a scary amount of intensity, right? Because that, if you're him and it's been a month, right? There were 3 months or whatever, right? You would talk to each other.
She made it sound like a few weeks was the first one. She
yes.
got the first tattoo after a few weeks. And then after that, it was like every few months, it was like another one appeared.
And the way he said it, the way she had said this story is they like, before he got arrested, they were like already madly in love, love at first sight, crazy. He was like, well, I barely even talked to her before I went to prison. But like, right? He's like, we barely had anything to do with each other.
Because I was going to say, well, they said they didn't have sex like in that 1 week. And so it's kind of like, and we had kind of talked about that. That seemed a little suspicious because it's like, if she's as like nympho as she is, where she's keeping like a pocket vibrator in her purse.
And he's as big of a player as she says he is. Like,
how did she not jump on that like in the 1 week before he was like arrested?
Right.
It seems unlikely given their personalities.
Yeah, that's a lot. And that's like a scary amount of, because that's a lot of pressure for him already. Like, we've been talking 2 weeks and you already have my name tattooed on you. Like, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. All right. So that pretty much covers that. It was a 2-hour episode this time.
Uh-huh.
And then our understanding of what is going on, because I feel like we don't really know what's
We don't know until like they're like next week and you're like, oh, okay, there's something different next week. What's going on?
Because what was so weird is we were debating, Mr. and I were debating whether or not this was the season finale or not. And we kind of said, no, we don't think it is. But then when I started watching it on demand, it said, and now a season finale. And I was like, wait, what? This is the season finale. But everything kind of seemed not completely nicely tied up. We didn't get any like update info cards at the end at minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So what we think is happening is that there's a 4-part life after lockup with the old crew that's supposed to start this next Friday. So that will be 4 weeks. And then I think they said they're coming back with this group in October. So it kind of makes sense that for some bizarre reason, in the middle of this season, they've decided, hey, we're going to throw in these 4 episodes of something completely different. It's almost like the other way right now with 90 Day Fiancé. It's like they have this random hiatus for no real reason. At least they've said to us.
Yeah. So
super bizarre.
Yeah. Same deal. I guess they're just trying to stretch stuff out. But this officially counted as like the mid-season finale. Which means we don't have to do our power rankings because these people are coming back and finishing their stories.
I was prepared with my power rankings, but
I know. I was like, some of them were like, how do I power rank Dylan? Like, he's been in one episode. Like, it was crazy.
But then that kind of goes back to, we haven't done anything bad. Where is your
neutral? Where is your zero?
Like, right.
Actually probably pretty moves him pretty high up in this list, but
far. Right? That's what I was thinking. Dylan probably would have been high up there. I feel like his looks may have got him there too. But anyways, instead we still have our student of the week. So who is your student of the week?
I went with Maurice.
Okay.
He's certainly talking the talk. right?
Yes.
And we don't know. We have yet to see whether he's going to walk the walk. But right now, like, at least he's saying the right things. Like, and even with the things, not keeping secrets, not lying, at least doing something right that's out there, which is, you know, he's the only one. I mean, yeah, he's one of the only people that we see that hasn't had the title card to be like, well, I'm actually keeping some secrets from her.
Like, oh, God, I know, right?
He's pretty much an open book. So good for him.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. And so I actually had Jessica's dad, Dave,
sure,
as student of the week. And I just really liked how welcoming he was of Maurice. Like I said before, I thought it was very sweet how both him and Maurice were kind of like, okay, let's be father-son. Like, let's have that kind of relationship. And that he was so open to having a son and like accepting him like a son. And you know, I just, yeah. But also at the same time, laying down the law, like, you cannot be here if you're on parole, and you cannot put my family in danger. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. How about your dunce?
I went with Christiana.
Okay.
Because she seemed to like be blaming the center that she broke the rules. I'm like, yeah, sorry, that's not the center's fault that you broke the rules. Like, you knew what the rules were. And like, I guess they were just, I thought it was the skirting the rules, whatever. She's been there long enough that she knows what the rules are. It's not their fault. And it's also not the people who work at the center. You can't blame them for enforcing the rules that they're set to enforce, right? Like, oh, well, they had to follow me. And it's like, cause it's literally their job to do that. And if they don't follow you and you get in trouble, they get fired, right? if you ran a halfway house and like, half of the people went out and committed crimes while they're supposed to be in the halfway house, you don't get to keep your job.
Yeah, right.
So just blaming everybody. We really haven't seen it yet, but it definitely sounds like she's starting to blame everybody around her for putting her in the wrong situation rather than like owning up to anything she's doing.
Right. Okay. So my dunce was Lindsay for flipping out over not getting her way. She basically just had like an episode long temper tantrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she wasn't wrong.
No, she wasn't wrong.
But there are more constructive ways to deal with that.
Right. Yeah. Instead of acting like a spoiled child.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. All right. What about your life lesson?
All right. So this goes both Scott and Sean. I don't know. It just seems so simple that why do we have to say this? That like, don't promise something you have no intention of doing.
Oh,
like that.
God.
That's just so.
I want to play. Absolutely
like,
nuts.
I want to play tic tac toe with these guys because they obviously can't think like further ahead than what they're doing right now.
Sure.
Like, I put two X's in a row. Oh, how'd you win? Oh, I don't know how that worked. Oh, God. Like, it's such short term thinking that I don't understand how you're that dense about thinking short term when you know. Have a year-long project. Don't tell her it's going to take 2 months. When you have every intention of calling your ex again, just own up to it. Don't say, oh, I'll stop calling her.
Yeah,
I'll stop taking her calls. I'll block her. Like, no, you're not. You're not doing that.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so my life lesson is tattooing someone's name to your body after you're in a committed relationship is a terrible idea, only to be trumped by having that same name tattooed in several different languages everywhere else on your body. Not only do you come off as obsessive and crazy, but that shit's not easy to cover up if you need to.
It isn't. So I have multiple issues with that I'm going on board. First of all, the name thing. I don't put the qualifier. Don't get anybody's name tattooed on you.
All right.
That's one. Two, I'm also very, very, very leery about other language tattoos because you don't speak that language. Right? And you don't know. I'm not saying that people are going to be malicious in doing it, but you don't even know that the tattoo artist speaks that language. They put something into Google Translate and it popped out something in Arabic and they're going to write that.
Right?
And you're like, you have no idea what that said.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, but I think also our perspective is a little bit different just because we're really not tattoo people.
Also true.
You know?
Yeah. I definitely feel like if you have a lot of tattoos and one of them's a name, that's not anywhere near as big of a deal. But if it's like, the first three tattoos you get are somebody's name, that's a little something else.
Yeah. So I feel like our perspective is a little different.
Yes.
So.
Also true. Fair enough.
Okay. All right. So that about wraps it up. But we will be back next week to cover the one of the four episodes
sounds
of
like we
Life
get
After
four.
Lockup.
I don't know what else is going to be going on with them people. So we'll see. We keep getting the same 30-second. I feel like we keep getting the same 30-second teaser. And I'm like, how are you filling 4 hours of this? I don't understand.
No, honestly, I really could care less about Sarah Michael, whoever. Megan, Maria. I'm just over them because Michael, he's just going to be Michael. You know, he's just going to string all the women along as much as he can. He's like, a chef in the kitchen trying to get 4 burners going at one time, you know, just like keeping everybody warm just in case.
Yep.
You know, like totally. Not about that life. And really, I think the only one that I'm kind of like is Tony and Angela.
They're funny.
Funny enough.
They're funny. They're like, because it's a train wreck, like, but they both say funny stuff.
Like, right. But I also just, Angela knows better. Of all the people on the show, she is by far the most educated. And it's like, it's not like she doesn't know. And I want to see the point where she is strong enough to just smack him in the face and be like, I'm done.
I'm really
and, like,
done.
Really mean
she
it.
Said, I'm yeah, done really a lot of times, it. But yeah, really
Oh, yeah,
mean it.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah. She's not a dumb lady. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for it to really click for her.
Yep. So we'll be back with that same time next week.
Okay. All sounds right. good.
See everybody
then.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.